This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The beer is cold and the wings are hot. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
Let's talk some Buffalo Bills offseason. Legal tampering gets underway on Monday. Greg Thompson, cover one, is good with his time to join us here in the sports bar. Greg, we know that there's a lot that the Bills can do to get cap compliant, and we want to spend time talking with you about this Bills salary cap. But we want to start with the big news of the day today. It's the four-year extension for Terrell Bernard, $50 million, $25.2 million in guaranteed money, $12.5 million on average per season. Do you feel like this was right in line for what Bernard was, you know, what his value is? I worry a little bit here that based on his size, that this might have been a little bit of an overspend by the Buffalo Bills.
I don't think that's an unreasonable concern. Obviously, we saw that he played at an all-pro level when healthy and played well below that when injured and playing through injury last year. So I think that the concern on him holding up is a valid concern over the next 5 years, because obviously we've seen kind of a one season of each. I will say, as far as the dollar amount works, that was literally exactly what I projected. 4 years, $50 million, $12.5 million a year. You look at guys last year like Zaire Franklin, Al Zaire Shahir, you know, looking at Bobby Wagner and things like that. He played as well or better than those guys, certainly better, well better than them when healthy. So he got paid a little bit more, or basically the going rate of what their slate inflation would be this year. And you saw Zach Bond got $17 million a year in his deal with the Eagles. So it's kind of hard to complain about Bernard getting 12.5 there. That was the going rate. It was either pay him that or he wasn't going to be retained. And I won't fight anyone who doesn't want to invest money at off-ball linebacker. The Bills obviously value that in their defense. I'm comfortable that when you see a guy play at a elite level and then a subpar level, but at that age is 24 and 25, I'm going to put that in the basket of health, and that just, you know, trust that when healthy, he's going to play in the elite level again.
Yeah, Greg, if we're calling all things equal, I'd rather, if you think this is an overpay, well, I'd rather do it for 1 year old, basically. That's, you know, draft and develop, certainly that is the route to go. Greg Thompson, cover one, is our guest. Before, we talked about, you know, what may happen on Monday in terms of players that may be coming to Buffalo or players leaving. Where are the Bills at right now as far as the cap? We know that Sam Martin was released yesterday, that I'll save $1.9 million. But how much more work has to happen before the Bills become cap compliant, Greg?
A fair amount. They're certainly not cap compliant right now, and they need to be by, I will say, a lot of fans think it's Monday. It's actually Wednesday at 4 o'clock that they have to be cap compliant by. That's the actual official start of the new league year, and everyone loves a good, you know, legal tampering now and again. So all the fun stuff that we hear on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday morning will be going on, but you can actually have those things announced before there are corresponding moves. So some of the easy ones, I expect some names like an Ed Oliver, a Spencer Brown, a Deion Dawkins, a Taron Johnson. I expect them to be restructured, a base salary restructure. Those guys can create over $30 million with the four of them. That's without touching Josh Allen, which is obviously another one, and without going into the bucket of some of the more, you know, you could technically restructure guys like a Dawson Knox or a Matt Milano or a Tyler Bass. I'm really hoping they don't touch any of those and just leave them as is, so next year they have the option to move on if they want to. And then clearly we haven't done anything beyond Sam Martin. You have a couple other guys no bigger than Von Miller in that bucket. So they have a lot of different levers they can pull to be able to get cap compliant, but they have work to do in order to get there.
Let's take a second on Von Miller. What's your take on what the Bills can or should do with Von Miller here coming up?
So I you know, go by the numbers. I think obviously he's not worth what he's going to be paid now. So I'm going to give a couple different options. By far the lowest percentage likelihood is he just stays and makes what he's set to make this year. That's not going to happen. I think there are a couple different options. Obviously you have the option where you release him now, which creates $8.4 million. It's kind of like last year's Stephon Diggs trade. You kind of take your medicine, you have an ugly dead cap hit, but then next year you're clean and you move on with nothing. So that would be my preference if we're going to release him. I don't like the post-June 1st cap hit because, as an example, I don't think anybody likes to look at this year's salary cap and see, oh, there's still $4 million in change associated to Trey White. And he hasn't been on the team for now a season and a half. So those are things that sound great in the moment, but it's credit card spending. It's not real savings. You're just kicking that can down the road. In theory, they can do that and make it $17 million in savings, but when you do a post-June 1st cut, you don't get it until June 2nd. So you don't get that to spend on free agents now. That's even after you would need to sign most of your draft picks. Like, that's, they wouldn't be able to do the rookie mini camp or any of the stuff at that point. It's not practical to do that. There are some other players where it could come into play, but Von Miller doesn't really make sense. So now it's, does he get cut and you save $8.4 million, and that's an important number, or do you work out another pay cut like we had last year where he takes a reduced salary and goes through? And honestly, I think the team kind of uses that exact number. He's owed $17.1 million in cash this year. So if you subtract 8.4 from 17.1, that gets you down to 8.7. I think you could probably even go a touch lower there. Maybe instead of 8.4, you ask for like $10 million of it back and get him down to 7.1. I think that's the ballpark of where he would be if he was a free agent. I do think he'd sign. I think he'd be one of those mercenary guys like we saw for years and years with Yannick Ngakoue and other players who would wait, Jadeveon Clowney, wait until the last minute into camp, sign the deal, but you still get reasonable money. They're always going to pay pass rushers. And whether you like Von Miller or not, he still contributed as a pass rusher and as a third down rotational guy. We just need him to be paid at that level. So I think that's the phone call. You offer him that number and say, hey, we'd rather keep you, give you the money now. You give us the savings we would get by releasing you anyways, and everybody's happy. Come chase into the ring.
Yeah, we're talking to Greg Thompson, Cover One. Another question here about the cap, because Josh Allen, at some point, Greg, I remember it was a summer day, it was August. Oh, they got the Josh Allen extension done. That was a little different here. You could certainly do this before. What makes sense to you? Do you do this now before free agency, or do you just take your time here and wait maybe till the summer, maybe till next season? At what point do you sit down with Josh? Because when you do, it's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, so the indicator for me was last year when they restructured his deal. They restructured both 2024 and 2025. There's still two more years after that on his contract, so I always took that as the indicator of, oh, they'll just do his new record-breaking contract, you know, the highest-paid player in NFL history, which he's going to get. That's going to happen at some point. I assumed it would happen in 2026. Obviously, I know some guys reported that it was going to happen this year. I think maybe Dan Graziano or someone like that, right after the MVP announcement, said, you know, wouldn't be surprised if we see a new record-breaking extension. So, obviously, if they're hearing something, maybe that's the case. I've always assumed it was going to be 2026. If they were to do it this year, they could save $11 million on the cap by reducing it down and then giving him the big new money. If they do it next year, they can save $30 million against the cap. So again, I'm still going to keep with my original take that it'll be in 2026, but if they do it early, I won't be upset. And honestly, there's probably a small little bonus, because if you do it before Patrick Mahomes, then Mahomes will come over top of him as the highest paid in NFL history. If Mahomes does it first, we'll probably have to go over top of that and give Josh the highest paid in NFL history. Not that it'll be a big difference. It'll probably be like a $500,000 a year difference, but they're both going to get like $65 million a year. So 6 years, $390 million. Shoot. Not bad money if you can get it.
Yeah. Greg, what about what James Cook is doing here this offseason, publicly demanding $15 million, asking for that $15 million a year? It's something that we haven't seen Brandon Bean do as the GM of the Buffalo Bills, invest that heavily in the run game, in that running back position, the positional value they place on it just doesn't seem to be that. But when you see what Saquon did this week and what Philadelphia is willing to pay, albeit a better player than James Cook, does that help James Cook at getting closer to that dollar figure with Buffalo? Or is this a situation where we as fans should start to begin the process of divorcing ourselves from James Cook being a Buffalo Bill long term?
So, just like you said, the next time Brandon Bean pays a running back will be the first time Brandon Bean pays a running back. I've seen far too much history of draft a guy, have him contribute. The next year you draft his backup as a succession plan. You let them play together. You let the first guy walk. You let the second guy take over. You draft a new succession plan. You let them play together. You let the first guy walk. I don't know how many more Zach Moss to Devin Singletary, Singletary to Cook, Cook to Ray Davis. I don't know how many more times we need to see that to see that there's a very clear line of strategy that goes into how they do that. Over Brandon Bean's tenure, the Buffalo Bills have spent the least money in the NFL on running back of any of the 32 franchises. Now, I will say, if someone's going to test that, it would be the best draft pick that we've had at the running back position during Brandon Bean's tenure. James Cook has been great. He was fantastic last year. I think he'll be fantastic again this year. And then I'll root for him when he gets his paycheck from the Raiders or the Jaguars or the Panthers or whoever pays him.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If I asked you the question, who's, you know, from 2024, if there was an underrated Buffalo Bill, who's the most underrated Buffalo Bill? I really like what Ty Johnson did for that offense.
Oh, yeah.
He's not walking out the door, is he? Because, and is that, will that fit here? What kind of market do you think there would be for Ty Johnson?
So a real quick nugget I'll give you to reinforce there. You'll know the answer, but I'll ask the question anyways. Can you name the NFL running back who led the entire league in yards per touch last year?
Ty Johnson.
Ty Johnson, yeah.
Literally number one in the NFL. So when Aaron Quinn and I, my co-host, obviously, if you had told us that we were going to go back and rank all of our pending free agents going into the season at the end of the year, and that our top two picks were going to be Mack Hollins and Ty Johnson, I would have laughed at you, but I mean it pretty sincerely. They're my number one priorities of any defending guys here. I think they're going to very highly likely be back. I think that they're going to be valued at a very respectable number. Neither of them are 100%, because there's a chance somebody comes. I think that giving both of them a raise that, hey, we're going to give you, you know, 2 years, $6 million, $3 million a year. We'll even guarantee a little bit of the next year. You get a raise. You get to stay with us. You get some security for the next 2 years. I think that's the ballpark that we're going to offer both of them, which is a nice acknowledgement of their contribution and a nice little bump over what they got last year. But if somebody comes along and says, hey, we're going to give you 3 years and $15 million, you know, God bless them. Go get your money.
Greg, we saw the extension from Shakir today. Of course, we get the extension from Bernard. Is Benford next? Is Rousseau next? Who do you think is next? I mean, we imagine that they've probably got offers in front of them, and now it's just a matter of ironing out the details. Who's next?
I would rank it in that order. I would say the next for me, actually, I'll be sneaky. My next extension candidate is actually Connor McGovern. I think that he's, if I were to hear one next, is he's a pending free agent as well, just like the rest of these guys. It's just not on a rookie deal. And I think that very similar to some of the off-field topics of, you know, he's the guy who hosts the, you know, the O-line room pizza parties at his house and that Josh Allen loves and is sneakily like the exact same age as Josh Allen and on the same progression line as him. I think Connor McGovern is the sneakiest extension candidate people don't talk about. But under the bubble of all the guys that everyone else does talk about, I would say it's Benford next and the most likely. I would put Rousseau after that and Cook a pretty distant fifth. Again, I laid out my reason for that. And I only put Benford ahead of Rousseau because I do think there's a little bit of the reason a Bernard and a Shakir grab the money a little bit earlier is when you're a later round pick who's, you know, somewhat undersized or not all the stereotypical trait checkboxes. Bernard's not a speed burner there and has also been a late round pick. So he hasn't banked a ton of cash like a lot of these other guys. Rousseau's getting $13 million this year no matter what. There's a little bit of incentive to just the bird in the hand kind of idea, getting that money now, especially when we're obviously showing that we're paying market level money, and market level money for Bernard or for Benford means like $20 million a year. He's going to get 4 years, $80 million, 4 years, $85 million. It's going to be big money. Whereas Rousseau, he has cash in hand now. He has off the charts traits. He's super young. Those are the guys who cash in big time in free agency. His agent is going to have the leverage to say, hey, you know, you guys want to offer 20, we want $25 million a year. We want $27.5 million a year. And I could see him betting on himself at cornerback. It's harder to have like a splash season per se without just kind of lucking into interceptions. If a pass rusher kind of stumbles into a 14 sack season, he could ask for $30 million a year. So I think that just the numbers of that edge rusher market make that a tougher deal to come to. And I think that there's a lot of people who would question, is Gregory Rousseau a super high end, really good edge two, or is he really a number one edge rusher who can, you know, threaten to lead the league in sacks and deserves to get that kind of money? We don't know where Brandon Bean and his team values him in that lofty status.
We're talking to Greg Thompson, Cover One, as certainly he keeps track and all these numbers and everything. And Greg, this is the fun part. The Bills and every other team, we get to go shopping here. Look, number one on the list, but the more I think about this, and maybe you tell me if I'm wrong, as much as I would love, and a lot of Bills fans would love to have Myles Garrett in red, white, and blue, there's just a lot of hurdles, a lot of roadblocks here. First and foremost, the Browns really shopping him? The idea that they cleared cap space? I mean, I'm just wondering, so is danger, are they preparing some sort of last-minute offer to him? But if he were available, and we don't doubt that Brandon Bean hasn't picked up the phone and at least asked, what would that look like in terms of a trade, in terms of what that would do for the Bills in their cap situation?
So, obviously, everyone that you trade for, you have to have the room to be able to fit them in initially on their contract as is. Then you can reach an extension afterwards and reduce that number, get them the new deal. Any of these guys that are thrown around, whether it was Max Crosby before his extension, now obviously names like Trey Hendrickson are being thrown around, Myles Garrett, all the other, DK Metcalf, any of those guys, they're going to want a new deal when they arrive at their next team. That also helps the team because you can reduce the cap hit, spread some of the money out, make it work. I always say, like, obviously, people who say the cap, salary cap isn't real, that's an exaggeration. It's very real. However, any team in the NFL can make just about anything work in a one-year window if they really want to. Last year, the Eagles, like, almost broke off every rule that ever existed in order to make accommodations for the run they went on, and it worked. It was fantastic and was successful. So, the Bills could certainly do that. They could be able to make it work. I will say from the Brown side, even though they did the absolutely insane restructure for Deshaun Watson to create some cap space, they would have to do all kinds of other things in order to allow them to trade Myles Garrett. It's significantly better and almost the difference of unrealistic or legitimately not possible to, well, maybe it's possible before and after June 1st. After June 1st, they legitimately could trade him and make it work and not cripple the rest of the roster. They would be really, really tough to even, like, feel the full roster, like to fill off the 53 roster spots. And the vast majority of them would have to be undrafted free agents or minimum contract players just to allow them to make that trade before June 1st. So I want it like anything else. If you gave me a full redraft of the entire NFL, I think Myles Garrett's the first non-quarterback being drafted. I think he's the best non-quarterback in the NFL. Of course I would want that. It's not actually realistic until we get to post June 1st. So if that happens then, that's awesome, because then you're talking about a 2026 draft pick and other pieces there. It's better for the Bills too. But I do think it's not just them taking a hard line in the negotiations. It's because they also know they couldn't realistically do it anyway.
What about the DK deal then? I mean, to hear that Seattle would like a first and a third, and DK is probably going to want an extension around $30 million. I mean, is DK Metcalf a $30 million a year wide receiver at this stage of his career? As much as I love the player, as much as I would love to see him in Buffalo, Greg, I have a hard time with that price tag.
I mean, he's on average been a 65 yards a game guy. That's an 1,100-yard season. He's been between 8 and 12 touchdowns every season. He's going to be 27 for this entire season. He's obviously a, you know, freak of nature physically. So someone's going to bet on that upside that they can do that. I'll also say I don't think it's an accident that his 1,300-yard, 15-touchdown season was the only season he played with an elite quarterback, because it was the last time Russell Wilson was any good. Me just saying that, there's a front office that will convince themselves that that's in there and that they can still get that elite level of production. Now, whether it should be the Bills and whether Brandon Bean thinks that, nobody knows. I'll also say there was a pretty reasonable report from Justine Anderson out there that the Seahawks had a third-round pick on the table in exchange for DK Metcalf, and then the next day all of a sudden – somebody had a report that the Seahawks are asking for a first and third. It's not too hard to connect those dots. Yeah. That somebody planted a report the next day. I will tell you with 100% certainty, the Seahawks are not getting a first and a third for DK Metcalf. Now, if they get better than a third round pick, sure, maybe. I do think that if the Bills put the 62nd pick on the table, it would be the best offer they get.
Last one for me, Greg. Pretend like you're Brandon Bean. I'm sure you've had these thoughts here because you want to address needs, right? We know the needs the Buffalo Bills have. You need more on the defensive line. You probably need a corner. I'm assuming that Rasul Douglas. What about the safety position? What about wide receiver? When you're looking at what might be available here coming up, whether that is our guys that are true free agents or guys that have just been released here, and more names keep coming through, what would be kind of your wish list here if you're Brandon Bean?
So I think the Bills are in that great spot that we used to complain about with the Patriots during the Brady era, where they always had this like cheat code where the guys who just got grossly overpaid by another team made all their money and then got released and like, well, if I'm going to sign for cheap, I might as well sign and go play with them. And some of them worked out famously, like Randy Moss and Corey Dillon and lots of other guys. Some of them were, you know, laughable, like Chad Johnson and Albert Haynesworth and whatever. There was a mixed bag of results, but they got the opportunities over and over and over again. That's the window I want to shop in. And they're like, hey, Jonathan Allen, you just got over $100 million from Washington, but you still want to contribute and play. How about you come sign cheap for us and chase a ring with Josh Allen? It would have been the case with like a Christian Kirk who just got traded. Yeah. But that's the market that I want to play in is, hey, who are some guys who are still really good, have made their money. They're not, you know, everybody wants to go sign the hot new free agent. Well, those are the guys who, you know, I don't know if you hear some of the people talk. A lot of the times, like the players don't even know which team they're going to sign with. It's literally the agent coming back and saying, hey, the highest number is here. Congratulations, you're a Cardinal. Like that. That's it. Like so, those deals when it's your first big contract, those guys do not take these other things into account. People, fans talk about, oh, but they want to go to a warm weather team or they want to play for a contender. None of that's real for those guys. for the ones that do, it's the ones who already made their money. And that's, you know, sometimes that's scratch and dent stuff. They're a little bit older. They're not, you know, in the prime of their career, but they still have contributions to make. And I think that's a space we can play in and take advantage of to be able to add some legitimate talent that can still help with this and go that route. I would expect way more of those this year than, you know, I'd love to say, oh my gosh, the Bills signed Javon Holland. I expect him to sign the biggest deal that anybody puts in front of him.
Yeah. Greg, the draft coming up too, and I'm curious as to what garage you park your car in. I mean, you know, there's obviously needs at defensive tackle, at corner, we've discussed. Do you have a draft crush yet? Is there a team that you're saying to yourself, all right, I'm team wide receiver, I want the Bills to get that true one on the outside and do it through the draft?
So I had the good fortune of being credentialed at the Combine, getting to watch a lot of these guys do the drills and things in person. We had a team down in the Senior Bowl. There's a lot of other guys who do way more draft work than I do. I focus more on getting ready for the free agency and those different things. But getting to see them in person in Indianapolis, I got to tell you, man, Derek Harmon, the D-tackle from Oregon, is a monster. Mm. Like, no person who is that big has any right to move that way. And, you know, I think there's some other guys who have, some maybe higher floor. Maybe he's not a guarantee to be a hit, but he looks an awful lot like Chris Jones when he moves around. And just guys that big are normally not that explosive and that smooth, and he's put together really, really well. That's a guy who I think is a slam dunk if he's there on the board at pick 30. I would love to have a guy. A lot of people, I joke a lot about large humans and I want to have a large guy. I don't want a guy who like is a, you know, just takes two steps and stops, but can't push the pocket or do anything. I want a disruptive guy who is huge. I want a guy who will keep Milano and Bernard clean, but can also get after the passer. I want a guy who will take double teams from Ed Oliver, but can also collapse the pocket and create havoc and chaos himself. So the Walter Nolans, the Derek Harmons, the Kenneth Grants, like that's where my focus is. I want a big disruptive monster there in the middle who can wreak havoc. Tyreek Williams was another guy and a sneaky one later on. He won't be a high pick, but C.J. West out of Indiana was awesome. He's probably my wish list for one of those sneaky fourth-round picks we have floating around.
Greg Thompson, Cover One, doing a great job as always. Greg, tell everybody about your show and the content they can get over at Cover One.
Absolutely. So if you enjoy this, obviously when you're done listening to the guy's show here, you can find our work anywhere that you find wonderful content like this. You can go on YouTube, search for Cover One. You can find me on Twitter at Greg Thompson or any other social media platform. Come on over, hang out with us, and have a good time.
Greg, thanks for the time, man. Enjoy your weekend. Let's do it again soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
You got it. There's Greg Thompson, Cover One, breaking down the Bills cap situation, talking about free agency. Lots coming up here on Monday for us to discuss in the sports bar.
Yeah, it's I am on board, by the way. Like, if all things are equal, danger, you could always use another defensive tackle. And it seems like one of those guys should be there at 30 or maybe just a slight move up.
It'd be great. Absolutely great. We'll see how it all shakes out. We'll see if we can keep some of the guys. I mean, it's funny that we're talking about Ty Johnson and Mac Collins as free agents that we hope that the Bills can retain. And we'll learn all of this as the roster gets constructed here over the course of the next 7 days or so as it starts to get constructed leading up to the draft. Happy Hour is next. We'll talk a little bit more about the Terrell Bernard deal. It's a move for the Buffalo Sabres. And we got the Amerks tonight, too.
I think the Amerks got jammed at the deadline. We should talk about that. The Sabres did not help the Amerks. Maybe somebody could point out, maybe they did, but at first blush, and I did not see Kulik got sent down either. So, no, we will not be getting back Yuri Kulik coming up for the Calder Cup run.
Okay, we'll get to that and more next. Your calls as well. Happy Hour on the way in the sports bar. 866-4326-585-866-4FAN.
You're listening to the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.